In 49 other states, football is just a game. But this is Wisconsin.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
Wisconsin fans demand the best. The best analysis. The best interviews. The best coverage. And no one delivers like the Bill Michaels Huddle.
Historic Brat Stop. That's where you can find us. We are down here in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm Bill Michaels alongside Mike Clements from NFL Sirius Radio here. John Dodds is here as well from Dodds on Sports. And a lot going on in Green Bay as the names continue to mount as to who may or may not be the next head coach and who is and isn't going to interview and who may or may not be the right fit. But this is getting interesting as many names are coming out now. Guys, first of all, thanks for making a stop down here, which this place is so historic and so cool. It's not hard to drag you down to this place, but a lot going on. I mean, as we venture into the NFL's postseason, the Green Bay Packers are still trying to figure out what happened in 2018, how they're going to get better in 2019.
Yeah, and it's an interesting search for the Packers. There's about five guys they're going to go and see that have a bye week, so they're going to go see them because they're busy helping them get their teams prepared for the playoffs this weekend. They come off with their interviews last week with Chuck Pagano, former Colts head coach, Jimmy Caldwell out of Beloit, former Colts and Lions head coach. And you get a lot of information from those guys. You hear from Jim Caldwell, and if he's going to be open and honest, he's going to say, hey, here's some things we thought worked against you guys. You know, it almost turns into a self-scout. And hopefully you gather some good information. And, you know, maybe some fans are saying, why are they talking to so many guys? Don't they have their minds made up? This is the best opportunity ever to get as much information on what's going on in the league, what people think of your team, what they thought of your team in the past, what they think of your roster, where they think the game is going, you know. Some of the challenges, things that have worked for teams. Guys are going to brag about their successes, and you'll learn so much from that. And now is the time to do that, because once you lock into the new head coach, you know, it's not a good idea to still be interviewing assistants around the league after you've had a new head coach. I mean, you lock in on that one candidate, and then he fills in the staff, and then the doors close, and you move on with your program.
Do you, with the names that have come about, and we've heard so many different names that have come about in the last few days, John, is there a name that sticks out to you that you say, this might be the guy, this might be the right fit?
They're not one that comes to mind. I still maintain that John Harbaugh was my number one pick 6 weeks ago when he asked me, and it's getting to the point where if he leaves Baltimore after their playoff run, it's going to require compensation. So I don't know.
It would be a trade.
Yeah, it'd have to be a trade.
Basically, yeah.
I hear Josh McDaniel's name all the time, and Josh McDaniel, you know, I guess he developed Tom Brady kind of like Marty Morningwig developed Brett Favre. I mean, is that really what you think? I mean, when it comes down to it, I don't know. But Mike raised a great point before. All these interviews, I used to work with the Oakland Raiders for about 20 years as an area scout. And they always used to say they have the 10th or 11th pick in the
draft.
You
told me, I mean, Al Davis used to read your stuff directly.
Yes. It was kind of ingenious. What the Raiders used to do is they'd get a local person who was working at the games, and they would keep track of injuries and keep track of rookies. And then they would compare the rookie reports with what their scouts had projected as kind of a cross-check 8 or 9 months later after the draft, which I thought was interesting. But this is also before DirecTV and all the games were on TV. And so this is
pre-internet.
Pre-internet, exactly. But what the Raiders used to do is, let's say Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf were the numbers, picks 1 and 2, and the Raiders had the 13th pick. The Raiders would send scouts to see Ryan Leaf and to see Peyton Manning. And they said, well, you know, why would you do that? The reason why you do it is you want to find out how to beat them. You want to find out their weaknesses
early and often.
You want to know what they like.
Sure.
So all these coaching interviews by the Packers, I think
you start a file on these guys.
Create a database and see the weaknesses, see the strengths. That's important. Knowledge is power.
When you look at the coaches that are coming in, there's a lot of distinction between defensive and offensive-minded coaches into who they should get and will he have power. One thing that McDaniels wanted when he was with Denver was he wanted personnel power. Wouldn't that, if you bring in a guy like Josh McDaniels or anybody that's going to say, I want to be able to have more say in who the personnel of this team is going to be, doesn't that further muddle the mess you already have with a general manager who already reports to a president who also wants to have say as to what it is they're doing with player personnel decisions and hirings? I mean, at this point, you know, if you would do that, aren't you in essence just basically kind of eliminating what Gutekunst does short of making him a glorified scout?
You're going back to the Mike Sherman era, and you do not want to do that. I think Bob Harlan knew that. That's why he hired Ted Thompson. He knew he was too distracted. In 2004, that Mike McKenzie situation in the locker room, when Mike McKenzie kind of turned, it just the Packers started off 1-4 that year, and it totally obsessed
Mike McKenzie, the defensive back, was alongside Al Harris back in the day. A lot of talent, really fast. He ended up going to the New Orleans Saints. But
for a third-round pick,
this put the head coach in the middle of this tricky kind of contract trade situation, everything like that.
Don't do it.
That's the beginning of the end. On top of that, you know, Mike Sherman, good coach. Let me talk a little bit about that, too. You know, Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst have to find the next Lambeau, Lombardi, Holmgren. I'll put Sherman in there and McCarthy. I mean, these are really good quality coaches. These were good coaches. And Mike Sherman was a guy who in 99 was the offensive coordinator for the Seahawks. So you had Holmgren out there. You had Ted Thompson out there in their personnel department. And he'd been a tight end coach for 2 years in Green Bay before that. So he was, you know, known to the organization. He gets the job, and then within a year or so, Ron Wolf then decides, okay, I'm going to step down. And Bob Harlan had just gone through the drama a couple of years before, Mike Holmgren saying, well, I'd stay if I had more control of the roster. And they were off to a good start with Mike Sherman, and I don't think Harlan wanted to go through that scenario again. And there was at a time where Holmgren was in Seattle and making his roster picks. And two or three other head coaches in the NFL were the same way, I think Shanahan and some others. And so Bob at the time thought, okay, we'll give this a try. We'll let the head coach have the final say on the draft board. Well, it was disastrous because, you know, as good of a football coach and an eye for talent or whatever Mike Sherman is, that's a full-time job running that scouting department and watching that tape to make those final decisions, those gut decisions. And that's why they brought in Ted, and then those two didn't mesh at all the first year. They were at opposite ends of the field, literally on the practice field. And then Ted moved on and got Mike McCarthy. And they will not go back to that model. Gutekunst should have. I'm okay with Mark Murphy having the final decision on this head coaching thing.
Yeah.
Because, John, you know Bob Harlan. You've known him your whole life, family, friends. Bob Harlan was smart enough to say when he got the job as the president of the Green Bay Packers, okay, here I'd gone from a sports information guy, a PR guy, from Marquette to the St. Louis Cardinals to now in the marketing department of the Green Bay Packers to now I'm running the Green Bay Packers. I'm not the football guy. I know plenty about it. That's why I'll hire Ron Wolf, and he will handle all football decisions, and I will make the revenue and make the fans comfortable. That's what my focus is, and it worked great. But Mark Murphy is different than Bob Harlan, and he hired a whole bunch of coaches as an athletic director. He played the game for 8 years. He's been down on the field. I think he's got a better feel, and I think it's okay for Gutekunst to do 90% of the work and line it up. But I'm okay with Mark Murphy at this point in his career at 59, 60, or 62 years old to have the final say that this will be the right move moving forward to ensure they get a Super Bowl in the next 3 or 4 years rather than have to go through 2 or 3 more coaches.
When you start to talk about the consideration of Aaron Rodgers in all of this, you know, a lot of people are split as to whether or not he should have a say or have some kind of an ownership of this. And I've been of the belief of whoever you hire has to be your hire, and that guy has to then come in and just have the respect of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers can't hold over somebody's head the fact that, oh, by the way, I gave you the good housekeeping seal of approval, so to speak. Therefore, you got the job because of me. As much as I respect Aaron Rodgers, I think players play and coaches coach and GMs figure out who the personnel department's going to be.
He's a player, and if you go back, this has happened two times in the last 20 years. The first time was Brett Favre. Brett Favre, Mike Holmgren tried to get in his grill and harness this guy in a structure, and Favre was kicking and screaming, and finally in 1995, Favre hurt his ankle severely, and Holmgren finally was able to impress upon him, please, go into the structure of the team. Just use the offense to help you. I'm here to help you. We're all on the same page. McCarthy comes in 2006, and he looked back at Favre's last 50 interceptions, and he thought that 80% of them were Favre trying to make a play, throwing late over the middle. And he just, and Favre and McCarthy kind of went up against each other. It took him, it was a 4-8 start in 2006. And then finally, Favre kind of bought into this that, hey, Mike McCarthy is structuring me to help me. And by 2007, they were running and rolling. So I think that's the model. You want to bring somebody in that says to Aaron, I want to help you. I want to structure you. I want to structure the guys around you. You're still a player. What can I do to help? You're a great player, but I'm not going to defer to you like Ray Rhodes did to Brett Favre. It's like, Brett, what do you want to do now? Because when you become an iconic quarterback, that's the big danger.
Well, Bill, I've been covering the team 30-plus years, but full-time, I was there for every snap, every day, every media, every locker room for Brett Favre's final 4 years in Green Bay. And we went from the 2005 season where they were going through a running back every 2 weeks with injury. Ted Thompson had come in and was rebuilding the line, and he throws, 29 picks against 24 touchdowns. They go 4-12. It's a disastrous season because Favre's got nothing around him. He's scrambling for his life. And like in Cincinnati, he threw four picks. Two or three of them were picked off because the Bengals happened to be really good at the volleyball drill that year. They were constantly getting picks that were deflecting passes and getting picks. But it's like, if I don't do this, there's no way we win the football game. We don't have that very good of a defense. We're not that good on special teams. And if I don't just take shots, and so McCarthy comes in, they go 8-8 the next year, and the next year they go to the NFC Championship. And if it hadn't been so darn cold that night, who knows? Who knows? He might have won that game and got himself into a Super Bowl. The point is this: when Favre is now out in Green Bay, what does he do? And he calls Darrell Bevell, who had been his quarterback coach during those Mike Sherman years. During the, U-70 play, was it, to, Kevin Berry out of Racine, right? The bootlegs, the naked boot, the work in the field left and right, and said, if I came to Minnesota, which ended up being the next year, could we run that offense? And Darrell said, sure, absolutely. I can put that in for you. And they looked great, and they almost got to the Super Bowl except for the pick against the Saints. So, that's Favre just saying, this is what works for me. And he was disciplined and efficient and threw a ton of touchdowns and turned the Vikings into a contender doing that. And that's what Aaron Rodgers is looking for. He's not looking to be aloof or arrogant or troublesome. It's the same thing with Tom Brady. These guys have seen everything. They've seen everything. And so it's going to be tough to find any coach, any 42-year-old offensive coordinator who's going to come in and outsmart them. But Josh McDaniels is the guy, with all of his ups and downs that he's had, that's been back in there with Tom Brady and gotten him back to the Super Bowl. And Brady must have, even though those two have argued on the sidelines and it's caught on tape, he must be able to go in and sit down with a meeting with Tom Brady and say, Tom, here's two things you probably didn't consider. Some of these coaches, too, Peyton Manning right now is actually stumping for Adam Gase. Gase, who had one really good year with Jay Cutler in the Chicago Bears. And before that, he was with Peyton Manning, part of that offensive staff when Manning was with the Broncos, right? I think it was the year they had 55 touchdowns. Peyton Manning, who I've got an interview that I can dig up, told us that on a telephone conversation. I said, tell me about your studying. And he went into a long story about, I've got spiral notebooks that go left to right like a stack of encyclopedias that I keep every week, every game. I write about the referees. I write about the what the weather was like in that stadium that day. He's got game notes leading up to it, and the resolve of what he found out from the game, he's written that down. Peyton Manning said there was one point in that season with the Broncos that he was looking at tape, and he saw something, and he didn't want to forget it, so he texted Adam Gase about that, right? And 2 minutes later, Gase had the response. At 1 o'clock in the morning, he said, that's impressed me. This guy's on the same wavelength. This guy's a grinder like me. And these guys can't always find coaches like that. That's what Aaron Rodgers is looking for.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We are broadcasting live down here at the Brat Stop. You can find us in historic Kenosha. The Brat Stop has been here for years and years. Everybody knows where it's at. Come on by and say hi. I'm Bill Michaels. We are brought to you by our good friends at Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network and the Huddle. And you can come down and get registered also to win the big screen TV we're giving away here in a couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. And if you want to stop by, also the Brat Stop wants to remind you they have an email list. It's simple. www, which I don't even think I have to say that anymore, broadstop.com. Just sign up at broadstop.com. Again, that's broadstop.com. Got more of the Bill Michaels Show coming up next.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
They have to set the criteria. And I can't change a whole lot in the next 2 days, next week. I'm 57. I'm doing this 35 years. Again, I'm not apologizing for anything I've done. I don't have any regrets of what I've done. Certainly not perfect. So that's really it. So I'm going to be myself, and I'll be as prepared as I can be. And then, we'll go from there, and that's all you can do.
Welcome back. Those are the words of Joe Philbin talking about, this is all you can do. This is all you can do. Try to do your best, be able to kind of put your wares out there, and then see where the chips fall after that. We'll wait and find out if Joe Philbin retains the job or if somebody else becomes the next head coach of the Green Bay Packers. Mike Clemens alongside John Dodd here as well. We are broadcasting live at the historic Brat Stop. We are here in Kenosha. Come on by. If you want to join the email list, you can do that. Bratstop.com. That is Bratstop.com. They've got everything from terrific food, great store out front, bands down here. They know how to throw a party. This place is fantastic, and I love coming down here all the time. So if you're going to be in the area, make sure you check out the Brat Stop. And if you want to get on the mailing list, go to bratstop.com. That is bratstop.com. So we've talked a lot about who may or may not be the next head coach. I'll start with you, John, because I know Mike's got his mouthful of Sprite over there, cocoa there. But I wanted to ask you, would Joe Philbin be a guy that you would consider keeping?
I guess I wouldn't. He's a very good coach, very competent guy, but the last couple of games mean nothing. The results of the Jet game, the results of the Detroit game, it's like, could you evaluate Kaiser last week where there's no Davante Adams, the tight end situation, Graham is hurt, you have rookies running around, you have no Jones in the backfield. Can you fully... And then Bakhtiari went out. Could you evaluate Kaiser last week? So you really can't evaluate the coaches. He seems like a really good guy. The only one I see that – I see Campen. We talked about that. Campen maybe returning or maybe Petten.
The defensive coordinator?
Yeah. Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Here's what the players say about Joe Philbin. Davante Adams will say, this past month or so, the critiques are direct, and there's no venom in it or anything like that, but we're getting honest information, which is something you want. I don't know. That doesn't make sense. How did Mike McCarthy survive for 13 years and have position coaches that were less than direct or something? I don't know. But I guess maybe what they're maybe alluding to is that Joe Philbin had a fresh perspective on finding problems and explaining why things weren't working and offering techniques or solutions to those players. And, they weren't, they don't want to get in the middle of trying to compare the, McCarthy's style to Philbin, but that's what they said was a positive. And I think that, if I was putting together a super coaching team, I'd have no problem having Joe Philbin as my offensive line coach. That'd be outstanding because he's done that for a number of years. That's pretty much the way he came up in his career. And maybe as an offensive coordinator as well. But at the end of the day, the head coach has got to be a guy where everybody stands at attention when he walks in the room. Mike McCarthy had that. I don't know if Joe ever will. I think he's an outstanding possibility, an offensive line coach or an offensive coordinator. I just don't know if he's the guy as a head coach, probably for really any of these situations in the NFL right now.
I can agree that I think a lot of us would like to see Mike Pettine. The question that I get all the time is, Aaron Rodgers really had a close relationship with Alex Van Pelt. Alex Van Pelt wanted to go call the plays. What happens, we'll say, if you keep a defensive-minded coach or bring in a coach that wants to oversee things and wants to bring in an offensive coordinator? Is Alex Van Pelt the guy that you would then bring back as the confidant for Aaron Rodgers and kind of make everything?
He's a free agent now.
Yeah, he is. He's out there. So would Alex Van Pelt be a guy that you'd like to bring back in and say, okay, let's go back to kind of put the band back together, so to speak? That was when you had some of your better years, when you had your confidant there, and that was the guy that could look at Aaron and say, hey, Aaron, you're screwing up, man. Right. We got to get this right.
Right.
I think that would be an interesting move. What is your read in terms of the Mike McCarthy calling a play and having Aaron Rodgers change it at the line? How much of it was McCarthy's play calling or how much of it was Rodgers? It seemed like Rodgers was, from the opponents that I talked to, he would change about 25% of the plays.
Yeah.
Is that what your read was?
Yeah, but I think it was at some point McCarthy was like, look, I've got to keep this guy on board. I think he probably felt he needed to keep Aaron Rodgers on board to keep his job.
Keep his interest.
But, I mean, I think his respect for Aaron's acumen on the field was genuine. To say, this guy has seen everything. He makes chess moves out there and adjustments and plays games with the cadence and all those kinds of things that I can't even coach. You can't coach that. He's at such a high level, and he's got so many little tricks in his bag and hand signals and all that other kind of stuff that, frankly, at some point, though, I think just it gets too complicated to play with this guy. It's got to be
at least when you're
difficult.
A rookie.
Well, it's got to be difficult to be in a three-point stance and saying, "What? What did he just change to?" It's constantly going on, but he's moving, and every substitution he sees, at some point, you just got to run the damn play and move forward. But I think that the McCarthy just felt, look, this guy is at that Peyton Manning level where he can move guys around. And the movies make is better than I could ever do in 25 seconds talking on a walkie-talkie into his helmet.
Looking at
the biggest thing that Aaron needs is the right personnel in the down and distance. And then he'll figure it out when he gets to the line of scrimmage. And that's where those two could clash.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the argument was. It's like, what are you doing, you know, third and 17, and you've got the run group in, you know, the 11 personnel. Those are the things that drove Aaron Rodgers nuts.
Let's do this. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're talking about this team because we got into this a little bit last week. I wanted to go a little bit further because whatever coach comes in here has to look at the big picture. And there's more than just a couple of things to think about when you're talking about just Aaron Rodgers and the future of this franchise. Stay tuned. We're broadcasting live down here at the Brotstop. We're in Kenosha. Come on by. You want to be a part of the email list down here? Go to Brotstop.com. That is Brotstop.com. More of the Bill Michaels Huddle, and it's brought to you by our good friends at Bud Light, coming up right after this.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Good men in the locker room. You know, the team should be, you know, Brian's done a great job, and where they have 10 draft picks next year or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. You know, so, yeah, I mean, there's a bright future, and there's a lot of good players on the roster. And certainly, there needs to be improvement, too, but that's, I mean, every team does that every single offseason. So, but I think there's some really good players on the team, no question.
Those are the words of Joe Philbin. And he's talking about the team. There's some good guys on this roster. Now, whether or not they're able to kind of put it all together next season, we'll have to wait and see. How many holes do they have to fill? How many guys are going to be needed to make whatever head coach happens to come in and take over this team, make them viable again? Let's be honest. I mean, that's what everybody's looking for, is this thing has to get back to good real quick. So there's a lot of people wondering how quickly they can get it back, whether it's going to be a year or two. We'll wait and see, but those are the words of Joe Philbin. We're broadcasting live down here at the Brotstop. We're in Kenosha. You want to be a part of the Brotstop email list? Go to Brotstop.com. That is Brotstop.com. And send them your email address, and they would love to send you some of the things that they have going on, some of the advertisements as far as bands and specials and such, because they got some great things going on down here at the Brotstop, the historic Brotstop. But Mike Clements from NFL Sirius Radio alongside John Dodd is here as well from Dodds on Sports. And, guys, this is not as simple is saying, well, we're going to come in and we're going to make Aaron Rodgers right again. We went over this last week. You have an offensive line, I think, that needs to be addressed probably first and foremost, along with the defensive front. You've got some decisions to make what you're going to do.
Isn't that awkward? If you're a offensive coordinator, say like Josh McDaniels, say, yeah, you know, I looked a little at your tape here before the meeting. I mean, how are you guys going to address offensive line?
Right.
You can't say that in an interview, can you? You can't say that a good against, like, what were you thinking there? You know, I mean, you guys are weak at offensive line. You've got a lot of question marks there. And what kind of help do you think you can get? I don't think it goes back and forth. You have to try and sell them on, oh, here's what I do with your offensive line to shore up. And I think they've got some serious roster holes. I don't think I've felt this bad about the Packers roster in years. In years.
How bad do you think it is? I went through the other day and I listed maybe 9, 10 positions.
It's 6-9-1 with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. That's how bad it is.
Well, but 6-9-1 with Aaron Rodgers and a young wide receiving core, you're talking about getting a guy like Geronimo Allison back. You'll have Davante Adams. You need to fix the tight end position. You need to fix the offensive line. But it's interesting because the offensive line rated out via Pro Football Focus as the best offensive line in all of football. However, when they went through and broke down the film, the majority of plays for the first read Aaron Rodgers did not take. It was mostly because of improv and trying to do the thing downfield to extend plays and get
55 sacks and over 40 of them.
Yeah.
He was holding on to the ball for more than 2.5 seconds, holding on to the ball too long.
That's exactly right.
And anybody that was able to watch all the games, you're not shocked by that final stat.
But his concentration was different. We talked about this several times this year. It reminded me of 2009 where he would go back to pass and he'd focus on something like the defense and he wouldn't be aware of the things around him. Then from 2010 until this year, he had an eye in the back of his head. He sensed where things were. He could get rid of it.
Yeah.
And in that Buffalo game, he got hit 3 times harder than I've ever seen him in 10 years where he didn't sense the guy coming. So either he was being distracted by his knee.
You get sacked 55 times, your accuracy is going to be off. Something's hurting.
Or there's rookie wide receivers that are quitting on plays where he's waiting for them to do something, unlike Jordy Nelson or something. Something was happening.
I've got a clip I may dig up for tomorrow's show, Bill, of Aaron Rodgers, and this is perfect timing. It was about 4 weeks ago, but we're just talking about, hey, how much you missed Geronimo Allison this year? And then he was asked, can Geronimo Allison play in the slot? Oh, yeah. And he gave several examples in successful plays where Geronimo Allison, it was a 6'4", lined up in the slot. And I don't know if he realized at the time, but basically he's saying is, yeah, we could replace Randall Cobb with Geronimo Allison. I thought it was an interesting
right.
answer.
So if do you need a veteran? Do you need somebody else besides Davante Adams to come back and play that street ball with Aaron Rodgers? Or do you think at this point in time it's Davante, it's Geronimo, the young guys that you have, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown, Jamon Moore, they have that ability to be a really solid wide receiving core that they can take this
you
thing
mean
and make
besides
it
besides Jake Kumerow?
And Jake Kumerow.
Yeah.
I'll throw that out there.
Right.
Do you think they've got enough to be able to make this thing go if they solidify the offensive line?
If they add a tight end, if they get Jared Cook back, and have some type of weapon at the tight end spot. I think all those guys have huge upsides. St. Brown, MVS. I think Jamon Moore even has some ability. In fact, when HaHa Clinton-Dix was leaving, he said that the guy that ran the best routes was Moore in practice. That's like his exit interview. I thought that was interesting. Moore, then you think back to the Packer really good receivers over time. Robert Brooks, drafted in 2002, really didn't get it till the end of 1992. Didn't get it till the end of 94. Then 95, he was all pro. It takes these guys. Freeman was an exception. He got it in year two. But I'm thinking that these guys are going to take a step. They're fast and they're big. I think they could.
That would explain why the Packers took Jamon Moore, first out of the three wide receivers in the draft. However, when they got him up there for rookie orientation and on through the whole season, man, the hands were just not consistent. They just did not have the ball skills. There's so many drop passes he dropped, not only in practice, but as you saw in the preseason, they didn't trust him.
Sometimes I think the drops are related directly to thinking. and not knowing where you are and trying to figure out what am I reading, what is Rodgers, the quarterback, reading.
Am I doing this right?
It's kind of like Devontae Adams in year two. He had the leg injury, the ankle injury, and that kind of that messed with him, a young player being messed with, having something to think about. He had a ton of drops that year, and people were giving up on him. People thought Jeff Janis was better than Devontae Adams. Wide receivers are a funny thing on the West Coast. There's a lot of things to learn, but I think all those guys, I think they're pretty high on.
Yeah, I think receivers can go through something like kickers.
Get a tight end.
They can just get off and
yeah.
And be in a slump, and they have to mentally overcome it.
I'm looking at this team now, and I'm thinking to myself, when John Coombe joined us for the postgame show a couple of weeks ago, he said, look, you can maybe get back to where you're in the postseason next year, but to have that Super Bowl mentality, is it 2020? Is it more realistic to think 2020? Or like the Bears. The Bears were last year, and they're looking about, you know, hey, get Matt Nagy in here, figure out this system, and all of a sudden you make one move for Khalil Mack, and you're all of a sudden finding yourself into the postseason. Can they turn it around that quick?
I think they can. And tell me if Kevin King is going to play. Whenever Kevin King played, they beat the Bears, a playoff team, week one. They were ahead of the Vikings 21-7 in week two. Then he got hurt. House came in, and it was 29-29. And then when they played the Rams head-to-head in Los Angeles, Kevin King was there. Kevin King was there when they played New England head-to-head on the road. And then Kevin King got hurt, and it seemed like when you have Kevin King there as your number one, you can put Alexander in the slot. You can use Jackson judiciously. Yeah. And then What amazed me was how well they played in the backfield against Seattle with Russell Wilson, because they had rookie Tony Brown, rookie Alexander, and rookie Jackson all across the way, and they were competitive. I think they really did a great job this year with that, with the corners, and they rebuilt that position. And when Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, you know you're in trouble, Bill, when you start trading starters in the middle of the year, and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix is traded. Whitehead is cut because he took a swipe at somebody in the New England game.
Right.
And you're replacing guys in the middle of the year. Looking back, that should have been the big warning, uh-oh. And then Montgomery gets traded.
Yeah, you know, some guys in the flagship were talking about this afternoon about how much does McCarthy or how much will the new coach have say in the roster and everything. I'm here to tell you, when Ty Montgomery was traded, Mike McCarthy and the position coaches, in a subtle way, from the podium in the media auditorium, said, yeah, we were in a meeting when we found out. That's their way of saying, we have no clue that they were going to do that. We had no clue. I mean, we met with our players on Monday. We had Tuesday off. And while we're in the meeting, there's a knock on the door. Hey, they just traded Ty Montgomery to the Ravens. And that's how the coaches found out about it. So it's not like Gutekunst is saying, hey, we're really frustrated with this and we're going to launch it. Who knows? But that's what the coaches were saying the next day from the podium, and I find that really interesting. One other quick point
I want
to talk about is this. I'm being pessimistic because I didn't think it was a Super Bowl team through much of training camp because of the problems at tackle. You know, Spriggs is your backup, and
we
kept on talking about that every day during training camp. I was impressed by the three receivers and the potential there, Aaron Jones coming back from his suspension, et cetera. But let's think about this. 2.5 years ago, you're watching Hard Knocks and Jeff Fisher and his band of clowns for assistant coaches. And people across the league are laughing about this. And in a year and a half, Sean McVay and, you know, Les, his general manager, they make some free agent acquisitions. And you get to a point where I'm at that Coliseum game. Beautiful day in Los Angeles, late October. A little bit of a breeze coming off the ocean, right? And the Rams aren't flinching. They've punted 5 times. And you got Mike McCarthy kind of hyper and back and forth. And, hey, you know, we got this thing going. It's been a tough – this could be our turnaround game to knock off the undefeated Rams, right? And Sean McVay calls a timeout, steps out onto the field, brings over Jared Goff, talks to him, and – it's like, oh, my God, this guy is going to outcoach Mike McCarthy. He's 32 years old. And, I mean, John, Bill, I'm telling you, 90,000, the place came to a hush.
Yeah.
It was like he was on the green looking for an 18-foot putt to make birdie and win the Masters. And Goff went back in, put on the chin strap, converted like a third and 12, and listened to his coach, took the instruction, executed perfectly, and McVay controlled the tempo of the game over Mike McCarthy, 13 years of coaching. And that's when I said, you know, I saw this McVay guy talk at the combine. I went to his press conference the day before, you know, the weekend before,
right,
you know, out there at the Rams facility. I talked to Sam Shields in the locker room about the difference in the juice that was going on out there. And there I saw him do that in front of 90,000 people on that game. And that's just it. So my point is, you can find a new coach that's got that kind of spark and control, you can win football games.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We are broadcasting live the historic Broad Stop. It's the Bill Michaels Huddle. It's brought to you by our friends at Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. You want to join the Broad Stop email list? Just go to broadstop.com. That's broadstop.com. They have some great specials going on down here as well. Mike Clemens alongside. John Dodds here as well. I'm Bill Michaels. More of the Huddle coming up right after this.
Border to border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
The injury bug has been here for a while and for some years, and you know, there's some stuff you just can't control. You can't control a guy getting thrown in someone's leg or a guy falling in an awkward spot or concussions. There's nothing you can do about it. There's no strength program. There's no training you can do for it. It's just some stuff, just football, and it just happened and it's part of the game.
Welcome back. That is Lane Taylor of the Green Bay Packers, and we are broadcasting live down here at the Broad Stop. We're in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Didn't the Miami Hurricanes, after got their ass kicked by the Badgers, fire their strength and conditioning coach and everybody?
Yes. Yeah. Well, Mark Richt ended up calling it a career down there, too. Mm-hmm. He ends up walking away. So, that was the second year in a row. First year, you say you're going to go back to the drawing board. Second year, you walk away. Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul Chris, when he has a month to prepare, he's been as solid as anybody. So, anyway, long story short, the bottom line is the Green Bay Packers also looking for some help and trying to get some things back to right again. 855-830-8648, 855-830-8648. If you want to chime in, feel free to do so.
And did you know that Pepper Burris has been the trainer for the team, for the Packers, for 26 years? Sunday was his last game.
That I did know, yeah. Pepper's been here a long time. He was here. I've been here 21 years.
Yeah.
So Pepper's here a little while before myself.
I don't know if that was necessarily his decision either. They just seemed like they wanted to move on or something like that. So, you know, now's the time. It's wide open. New era. We move on.
Well, you know what? They're changing a lot of things in Green Bay. And maybe that's Brian Gutekunst. Maybe that's Mark Murphy. We don't know. Could have been Doc McKenzie. Look, you know, Doc McKenzie's the head guy up there. When you talk about trainers and such, he's the guy that has a lot of say over the medical conditions for some of these guys as far as being cleared to play or not cleared to play. I'll tell you this. Pepper's a good guy. Got a lot of great stories. You'd love to be able to crack open his mind.
Well,
you know what I mean?
God.
He's got stories upon stories upon stories. Yes, he does.
Literally.
But it used to drive Brian Noble crazy. When I did the show with Brian Noble with the postgame show.
Yeah.
Because Pepper and Doc would run out on the field. Okay, you could be laying there writhing in pain. Doc would be down looking at your knees or looking at your ankle. And Pepper would run out. He'd look. And then he'd always look over to the coach. Like, okay, he's not dead, but he's got this.
Right.
So he's not coming back, you know, right away. And it used to drive Brian, former player, nuts because you're laying there in pain and agony and, you know, you want to be out there with your guys.
How about the injury?
Pepper's
man.
Already signaling like you're a piece of meat, like, nope, that meat's done for the day.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. It used to drive him crazy all the time. Anyway, that being said, welcome back. We're broadcasting live at the historic Broad Stop here in Kenosha. Come on by and say hi here for another hour. So if you want to swing out. We're going to be here hanging out for a while. Also coming up at the bottom of the next hour, going to start talking about the postseason. Not necessarily the Packers postseason, but to the postseason for the teams that are actually going to be participating, because we do have some new faces to talk about this upcoming season. Getting back, we only got about a minute here, guys, before we get to the top of the hour. But Mark Murphy had wanted to knock down the silos. And I understand it, because Bob Harlan set it up to where football people handle the football side, I'll go handle the business side. One shall not mix, and we'll all come to the middle. We'll build a great product and put it on the field, and that'll be what people watch. Mark Murphy's looking at this going, Mike, you've said it before. The product's not great. I'm missing butts in the seats. They're not buying beer. They're not paying for parking. They're not going to the pro shop. So I got to get involved. I got to knock down the silos. Do you think once he knocks down some of those silos, do you think he just goes to Brian, Goody, you handle the player personnel. The coach is now you. I think I've got everything working. We'll talk a little bit, but I got some other fish to fry. We got to worry about ticket prices and bringing people back.
I think Mark Murphy is 62. He's already got his heir apparent lined up in Ed Policy, son of Carmen Policy, 49ers. Ed's about 48 or so. Helped build all that Titletown stuff. I think Mark Murphy wants to get another Super Bowl. That puts him one up on the Harlan era, and he's trying to get there as fast as he can so he can walk off holding Lombardi Trophy. I think that's his M.O.
I agree with that. I think even Bob Harlan had an exception to the silos that he set up when he changed things up and went with Mike Sherman. Mm-hmm. So when he went with Mike Sherman as GM, he retooled that later, and then as with Ted Thompson.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. 1 hour down, 1 hour yet to go. Stay tuned. A whole lot more of all of this, and we're going to continue to decipher through this whole search as well. Hang in there. More of the Bill Michaels Huddle coming up right after this.
Sixteen stations strong.